You're listening to a special cryptid edition of the Blue Ridge True Crime Podcast, bringing you compelling true crime stories from the Appalachian Mountains and beyond. I'm your host, Alfred Dockery. Grab your hat and the lantern, and let's get on the trail. In the Shadow of the Mothman. From local monster to global omen and the making of modern myth. Shortly before midnight on Tuesday, November 15, 1966, Roger and Linda Scarberry and Steve and Mary Mallett were out joyriding in the TNT area, an abandoned U.S. ordnance complex, part of the 2,500-acre McClintock Wildlife Area. As they crested a rise, they noticed red glowing eyes in the bushes, which they took for a nocturnal animal, probably a raccoon or a deer. When they reached the highway, they got a better look at the animal. It was a 6 to 7 foot tall, man-like form with wings protruding from its back. It unfolded 10-foot wings and rose straight up into the night sky. Frightened by the creature, Roger Scarberry turned onto the highway and slammed the gas pedal to the floor, heading toward Point Pleasant, West Virginia. The speedometer climbed past 100 miles an hour, pushing 105. About 170 kilometers per hour. Looking up, they saw the creature above them keeping pace, its wings cutting through the night. When they reached town, they reported what they had seen to the sheriff's department. The next day, Scarberry, Mallett, and deputies searched around the abandoned power plant where they had first seen the glowing eyes. All they found was one footprint that they couldn't identify. The Point Pleasant Register, the local newspaper, carried this headline on November 16th. Couple sees man-sized bird, creature, something. It was soon picked up by the wire services and became a national story. Early reports referred to the creature as the Mason County Monster. But by the weekend, a new name had taken hold, one that would echo through the hills of West Virginia for decades. They called it the Mothman. Reports of additional sightings soon followed. Kenneth Duncan of Blue Creek near Charleston, West Virginia, about 50 miles or 80 kilometers to the southeast, reported seeing a brown human being that was gliding through the trees and in sight for about a minute. He was part of a group of men digging a grave for his brother-in-law on Saturday, November 12th. This may have been the first Mothman sighting. Newell Partridge, who lived about 100 miles, 160 kilometers north of Point Pleasant, near Salem, West Virginia, reported seeing the thing in a meadow near his home roughly 90 minutes before the Scarberry and Mallett sighting. According to Partridge, his television set started acting like a generator, and his dog Bandit began carrying on something terrible. When Partridge shined a flashlight into the field, he saw a pair of eyes glowing like red reflectors. He said the dog's hair stood straight up. The German Shepherd ran into the field and did not return. The next morning, there was no sign of the dog. While Mothman sightings were the most famous piece of the puzzle, the 1966-1977 period in Point Pleasant was characterized by numerous other unusual and unexplained occurrences. Witnesses described seeing lights in the sky, luminous spheres, dish-shaped objects, and large aluminum cigar-shaped craft. In his book, The Mothman Prophecies, John Keel also described shadowy figures called the Men in Black, who stalked and intimidated witnesses, often posing as government agents or Air Force officers. Keel suggested they might be ultra-terrestrials. More on that later. Witnesses and investigators also reported telephone disruptions, including strange electronic sounds like whistles, static, beeps, and loud clicks during calls. Some described the noises as resembling a sped-up phonograph record. Others reported calls that sounded like Morse code beeps. A visitor from Lanulus. Perhaps the most bizarre incident or series of incidents involved a sewing machine salesman named Woodrow Derenberger, which occurred about 2 weeks before the Mothman sightings at the TNT area. Derenberger was driving on Interstate 77 near Parkersburg, West Virginia, about 7:30 p.m., when a dark charcoal gray craft traveling 8 to 10 inches above the pavement passed his van and slowed to a stop in front of him, blocking the highway. He described the craft as being made of metal and shaped like the globe of a kerosene lantern. A door, much like a car door, opened and an occupant who appeared human stepped out, approached Derenberger's truck, and asked him to roll down the window. They had a 5 to 10 minute conversation, which Derenberger decided was conducted through mental telepathy because the grinning man's lips never moved. The man told him his name was Cold and asked him several questions, some quite personal. He also said he would visit Derenberger again. Their business concluded, Cold walked back over to the spaceship, a door opened, and another occupant reached out and helped him through. The craft rose and flew off. I'm not sure why a telepathic alien would ask Derenberger to roll down his window. Derenberger claimed that after his initial contact, he received telepathic messages from Ingrid Cold, which culminated in a trip to Cold's home planet, Lanulus. He went on to share his story on the TV and radio talk show circuit. An audio from a 1967 interview with him is available on YouTube. In 1971, he published a book about his experiences titled Visitors from Lanulus, Harbinger of Doom. On December 15, 1967, the Silver Bridge connecting Point Pleasant, West Virginia and Gallipolis, Ohio, collapsed during the evening rush hour, resulting in the deaths of 46 people. The collapse took less than a minute as the bridge swayed back and forth before flipping over into the Ohio River. Here's how Kiel described it in The Mothman Prophecies. The time was 5:04 p.m. Steel screamed. The 700-foot suspension bridge twisted, and the main span split from its moorings at either end. Electric cables strung across the bridge snapped in a blaze of sparks. 50 vehicles crashed into the dark waters of the Ohio. Tons of steel smashed down on top of them. The bridge collapsed exactly 13 months after the Scarberry-Millette sighting, prompting some to see the Mothman as an omen. Some witnesses and investigators reported prophetic dreams and messages before the disaster. The 1966-1967 wave of UFO and Mothman sightings in the Point Pleasant area ended when the bridge collapsed. The Silver Bridge failed due to a critical design flaw compounded by increased traffic loads. The primary cause was the fracture of I-bar 13, a key suspension component, which snapped under pressure. Built in 1927, the bridge was not designed for the heavier vehicles of the 1960s. A malfunctioning stoplight also caused traffic to back up on the bridge. The book that built the Mothman. John Keel's 1975 book, The Mothman Prophecies, transformed a local series of West Virginia sightings into a global pop culture phenomenon. As the book title suggests, he not only popularized the Mothman, but also, by connecting the sightings to the collapse of the Silver Bridge, cast the creature as an omen of disaster, a development that would shift the local Mothman mystery to a global phenomenon. The book follows Keel's year in Point Pleasant, where he investigated UFO sightings, interviewed witnesses, and spoke with self-described detainees involved in the strange events. His writing is vivid and immersive, but the narrative suffers from an overload of paranormal claims, theories, and digressions. Keel jumps abruptly from one topic to another, often leaving the reader disoriented. The best review I read of the book started with, "I thought there would be more Mothman," which is fair. It's not that the Mothman is absent, it's that Keel seems intent on cramming nearly every paranormal idea and anecdote he knows into the book, often at the expense of focus. It's a tapestry of the weird and surreal. The book also captures the Cold War paranoia of the 1960s. Keel and other writers of UFO and paranormal phenomena believe they were under surveillance by the FBI, the CIA, and the United States Air Force. Among the true believers, this suspicion extended to extraterrestrials or ultra-terrestrials, the so-called men in black, who they thought were monitoring not only their actions and writings, but even their thoughts. Disturbingly, Keel describes the men in black as having sharp, almost oriental features with dusky olive complexions. They wore ill-fitting black clothing that was either out of style or not yet in style. They had fingers that appeared a bit too long and spoke in an odd sing-song cadence. Oh, and they traveled everywhere in black Cadillacs. Keel popularized the term ultra-terrestrial to describe beings and forces that coexist with humans but operate on a different time frame or dimension. Unlike extraterrestrials, which are biological beings from other planets, Keel argued that ultra-terrestrials operate outside the limits of the space-time continuum, yet can cross over into our reality. In other words, they didn't fly to Earth from another planet. They stepped through a portal from a different reality. He felt this theory could explain everything from the Mothman to the Bell Witch poltergeist. He described these beings as having a predatory nature, often taking joy in manipulating human behavior by offering prophetic visions or messages that are frequently slightly incorrect or misleading. For example, Keel writes in his book that he received telepathic messages warning him that the 1967 White House Christmas tree lighting ceremony would trigger a massive power failure across the eastern seaboard. At the end of chapter 18, he reveals that a completely different disaster occurred. Quote, "They've done it again," I finally muttered softly. "Those lousy bastards have gone and done it again. They knew this was going to happen and when. And they gave me all that bilge about a power failure. They knew. They just didn't want me to be able to warn anyone." Unquote. Let me give you three examples of the book's paranormal claims. From Chapter 2, The Creep Who Came In From the Cold. Light from UFOs can cause eye burn. Quote, "One of the more extreme cases of UFO blindness occurred on the night of Wednesday, October 3, 1973, in southeastern Missouri. Eddie Webb, 45, of Greenville, saw a luminous object in his rearview mirror, and he put his head out the window of his truck and looked back. There was a bright white flash. Webb drew his hands over his face, crying, 'Oh my God, I'm burned, I can't see.' One lens had fallen out of his glasses, and the frames were melted." Unquote. From Chapter 4, Take the Train, The UFO That Converted St. Paul. Quote, "Often, they, UFOs, project powerful searchlight-like beams toward the ground. Persons caught in these beams undergo remarkable changes of personality. Their IQ skyrockets, they change their jobs, divorce their wives, and in any number of well-documented instances, they suddenly rise above their previously mediocre lives and become outstanding statesmen, scientists, poets, and writers, even soldiers. In religious lore, being belted by one of the light beams causes mystical illumination. When Saul, a Jewish tent maker, was zapped by one of these beams on the road to Damascus, it blinded him for 3 days, and he was converted to Christianity on the spot and became St. Paul." From Chapter 5, The Cold Who Came Down in the Rain, Indigenous people did not settle in West Virginia. Quote, "The Indians must have known something about West Virginia. They avoided it. Before the Europeans arrived with their glass beads, fire, water, and gunpowder, the Indian nations had spread out and divided up the North American continent. Modern anthropologists have worked out maps of the Indian occupancy of pre-Columbian America according to the languages spoken. The Shawnee and Cherokee occupied the area to the south and southwest. The Monacans settled to the east, and the Erie and Conestoga claimed the areas north of West Virginia. Even the inhospitable deserts of the far west were divided and occupied. There's only one spot on the map labeled uninhabited. West Virginia." Unquote. I guess Keel didn't get the memo about Chief Cornstalk, the Battle of Point Pleasant, and the curse. The book is a wild ride, but if you're interested in the paranormal, check it out. Skeptics Strike Back. So how did skeptics explain the Mothman sightings? Mostly birds. When the Mothman was first spotted, then Mason County Sheriff George Johnson said the creature was likely a shakepoke, a kind of heron. In an Associated Press article that ran on Sunday, November 20th, 5 days after the Scarberry-Millette sighting, Robert Smith, an associate professor of wildlife biology at West Virginia University, stated that the eyewitness descriptions would be a good match for a sandhill crane traveling outside its normal migration route. In a July 2022 article in the Skeptical Inquirer, researcher Daniel A. Reed proposed that it was statistically more likely that witnesses were misidentifying a great blue heron. The crane and heron are similar in size, but as Reed pointed out, the herons can be found in West Virginia year-round. In April 2002, Skeptic Inquirer columnist and paranormal investigator Joe Nick traveled to Point Pleasant and interviewed residents and a wildlife manager at McClintock. He argued that the Mothman sightings were likely misidentified owls. The initial theory pointed to the common barn owl, but Nichols' further research suggests several owl species could be responsible. The primary candidate was the barred owl, which is common to the area, exhibits strong eyeshine, and is larger than a barn owl. Nichols concludes that multiple owl types probably fueled the sightings. Interestingly, Asa Henry shot and killed a snowy owl across the river from Point Pleasant in late December 1966. The bird was 2 feet tall and had a wingspan of 5 feet. It was stuffed and mounted and can be seen in the Mothman Museum. Mothman Goes Hollywood. In 2002, the movie The Mothman Prophecies was released. The film replaces John Keel, UFO investigator, with political journalist John Klein, played by Richard Gere. The plot is significantly cut down and streamlined. The film also shifts the setting from 1960s Point Pleasant to the early 2000s. Klein drives from Washington, D.C. to Richmond, Virginia, only to find himself in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. For reference, Richmond is 110 miles or 180 kilometers south of D.C., and Point Pleasant is 370 miles or 595 kilometers west of Richmond. The movie seems to hint at teleportation as the explanation. Personally, I think his navigator was the ghost of Douglas Wrongway Corrigan. Every time Klein attempts to leave town, mysterious forces prevent him from doing so. He encounters inexplicable situations, some of them quite dangerous, and becomes involved in an investigation into the Mothman. Ingrid Cold makes it into the film. The Men in Black don't make the cut. The Mothman is seen in split-second but disturbing vignettes. The film builds tension toward a disaster but concludes with a heroic rescue, offering a more traditional Hollywood ending. The Rotten Tomatoes critics' consensus is a creepy thriller that poses more questions than it answers. Well played, Rotten Tomatoes. Well played. The film grossed $55 million worldwide on a $32 million budget, so it wasn't a monster hit. Still, it introduced new audiences to the Mothman and gave the legend more international exposure. Mothman Incorporated. I know what you're thinking. That's all well and good, Alfred, but can I get a Mothman beanie baby or t-shirt? I'm glad you asked. Since 2002, Point Pleasant has hosted an annual Mothman Festival every third weekend in September. It's a celebration of their friendly neighborhood, Harbinger of Doom. You know what they say, when life gives you a terrifying cryptid, throw a party. In 2023, an estimated 15,000 attended. The town unveiled a 12-foot-tall metallic statue of the creature in 2003, created by artist and sculptor Bob Roach. Yes, the statue is ripped. No word on whether there's a Mothman workout video in the works. In 2006, the Mothman Museum opened. It houses historical archives, original props from the movie, and merch. Lots of merch. According to the museum website, there's also a Mothman escape room, a Mothman blacklight mini golf, and a van that will take you on a tour of the TNT area. If you visit, could you grab me a Mothman sticker or magnet? I'd be much obliged. Mothman's World Tour. About a decade after the Silver Bridge collapse, Mothman-related sightings begin to occur internationally. September 10, 1978, Freiburg, Germany. 21 miners encountered a dark, winged figure at the mine entrance. The creature, later referred to as the Freiburg Shrieker, reportedly let out a sound like 50 people screaming. The miners refused to enter, and shortly afterward, an explosion occurred that likely would have killed them. April 1986, Chernobyl, Ukraine. There's some reason to believe this may be a retroactive fabrication, but a legend persists of a black bird of Chernobyl with red eyes seen by workers leading up to the nuclear disaster. August 10, 2007, Minnesota. Following the I-35 West Bridge collapse in Minneapolis, a caller to the Coast to Coast AM radio show reported seeing the Mothman on June 27, roughly a month before the disaster. March 2009, Chihuahua, Mexico. A student reported being chased for 15 minutes by a man-bat with red bloodshot eyes. Some later linked this sighting to the H1N1 swine flu outbreak. The Chicago sightings. In August 2011, a person took photos of the giant Indian statue on the corner of 63rd and Pulaski, which later appeared to show a bat-like creature in the background. Skeptics frequently point to this as a Fox Bat brand kite, but the sighting set off a new wave of interest. A month later, multiple witnesses in a park reported a 7-foot-tall bat with glowing orange eyes perched on a basketball hoop. In 2017, there were over 55 reported sightings. On April 7, a woman walking her dog in Oz Park encountered the creature. She was terrified and said it felt like it was staring into her soul and reading her mind. In true Mothman fashion, it spread its wings and exited stage up. Since 2019, there have been a cluster of sightings around O'Hare International Airport. Epilogue. Longtime listeners know that my standard of proof for cryptids is simple. Until a Toyota Tundra hits one of them, I ain't buying it. And yet, the Mothman endures, not so much as a creature of flesh and blood, but as something far more resilient, a story that refuses to die. What began as a terrifying moment for four young people on a back road in West Virginia has evolved into a global phenomenon. The Mothman has transcended its origins as a regional mystery to become a permanent fixture in our cultural imagination. It has been explained by biologists, investigated by skeptics, and embraced by believers. It has been commodified, memorialized, and marketed. 12 feet of metallic sculpture now stands as a witness to our dread of the unknown. The Mothman, it seems, is still out there, whether he's waiting in the shadows or in our imaginations is the question. That's it for this episode of the Blue Ridge True Crime Podcast. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please hit subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It helps more people find the show. Check the show notes for links to the Blue Ridge True Crime Substack and YouTube channel, and any story-related links. Until next time, I'll look for you on the back roads.